Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Thursday, May 20th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. And if you're really into this thing, I need you to go over to Apple Podcasts, give this show a 5-star review, let everybody know why you like it, because it is simply the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation and affection of this show to an even deeper level, I need you to go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival and sign up. $3 a month for hours and hours of bonus content. You get at least 2 bonus episodes a month, and it's pretty cool. It's some good stuff there. I get a little more personal back there, get a little more emotional. I did cry on an episode. I'm proud of it. I'm not going to deny that I didn't cry back behind the paywall a couple weeks ago. I'm a man. This is episode 508. I have a super special guest, comedian and actor, Subha Agarwal. I'm going to share that conversation that I had with her, with you, in a bit. Right now, I just wanted to talk to you for a few moments. I'm actually going to break the fourth wall, as I often do. Not as much as my good friend Randolph Terrence, but I'm going to break the fourth wall. I'm actually recording this episode on a Wednesday. I'm recording this on Wednesday, May 19th. I'm putting this episode out early because I am going to see my parental units. I have not seen them in ages, in over a year. It's the longest I've been away from them in my entire life, that without going without seeing them. Of course, we talk every day. Eases a lot of the, I guess pain or just anxiety or whatever. I know what's going on with them. I like to check in with them, even if we don't talk that long every day. So I'll be finally seeing them, getting to go home, so I'll be doing that for a couple of days, and I just wanted to put this out early instead of just holding on to it, because this episode's been in the can for a bit, but that's why it's coming out early. I hope you enjoy that. I hope you're enjoying my amazing conversation with Shalewa Sharp. We gave you a 2-hour plus conversation about St. Vincent's Daddy's Home. We nerded out about that, and I had so much fun doing that. So I hope you enjoy that. Continue to enjoy that, and continue to enjoy East Town and Down, my special Mayor of East Town recap pod with the very lovely and talented Leah Bonema. That's doing well. People seem to be enjoying that, so I'm really happy about that. There's 2 more episodes to go. I'm gonna try to get HBO Max set up so at my parents' house so my dad can watch it. Hook them up with all that stuff. And this week, man, we lost Paul Mooney today. Legend. He is one of the people that people don't talk too much about, but he's obviously one of the greats. People that are in the game really know about him. I think he kind of came into the forefront for most people when he did Negrodamus, the younger people, when he did Negrodamus on Chappelle's show. Obviously, he was a good friend of Richard Pryor, wrote a lot of television, and helped Richard Pryor with his act. Two amazing stand-up comedy albums that shaped me as a fan of comedy. And then I would say he definitely had his imprint on the way that I talk about things, the way that he talked about race and wasn't afraid to tackle race in his set. He had an album called Race, and then another album called Masterpiece, and I had the tape. I can say that I had both those tapes of those albums and listen to them incessantly. Is it incessantly? I don't think that's the right word. I listen to them all the time. Let's actually get the right. Let's see what constant. Okay, that's right. I listened to it constantly in my youth, where I wanted to be a stand-up comedian, but didn't know how you could do that as a 13-year-old. But I really did love his work. Yeah, so RIP, man, a legend. I never got to see him live. There was one time, I think maybe 2012 or 13, Levity Live in West Nyack opened in 2012, I want to say. And that will always be my home club. I don't care how much corporate America tries to change that club, but that'll be always known as my home club. And I started working there, and I remember there was a weekend that Gordon Baker Bone was opening for Paul Mooney, and I was going to go up there to see the show. And I didn't get to see it because the show got canceled because he said something and somebody got mad. I forgot what it was, but I have to get Gordon Baker Bone back on the show, and I'll bring that up and get him to talk about it. But, yeah, so never got to see him live, but a legend nonetheless, and RIP to that man. His work still lives on. I know there's some shit that people say, well, how come he ain't talking about? Because I don't know all the details. I've heard some shit, but I ain't going to talk about it right now. RIP to Paul Mooney. Legend. And what else? I think that's about it, folks. I think that's it. I think I want to just get you to Subha Agarwal. We had this conversation a few weeks ago, and it was just it was just a great conversation. I'd wanted to have Subha on for quite some time and just never got around to it. And she moved to LA, and now that the pandemic it's still upon us, but we're getting through it, even though more people should fucking get vaccinated. But we're getting through it nonetheless, and things are opening back up. And since things are opening back up, she is going to be, you can catch Subha at the Madhouse Comedy Club in San Diego Friday through Sunday. So Friday, February, Jesus, part of me wants to start this whole intro over, but I'm not going to do that. Friday, May 21st, she will be there. Two shows, 7:15 and 9:45. Saturday, same time, 7:15 and 9:45. Sunday, May 23rd at 7:30 p.m. So listen to this podcast. If you live in San Diego and you go to the show, tell her, and you listen to this show, tell her that I heard you on the Mundane Festival and whatever. But go see her if you're in that general area. She's fucking hilarious. So go check her out. Yeah, so this has just been a long time coming. I think I even say that in our conversation that I was super excited to have her chat with me and stuff. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the very lovely and talented Subha Agarwal. Computer. I feel like it's been ages since I've seen you. Obviously, how long has it been since you moved to LA?
I think like almost 5 years now.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Jesus. That's crazy. What did you move for?
To write for the Jim Jefferies show.
Jim Jefferies, right. And how have you liked LA so far?
Oh, I don't like LA. I know, like, not even a little bit. Everyone's like, you should stop saying that. And I was like, that's very LA of you to be like, hide how you feel. Maybe you'll offend somebody. I don't give a fuck. I don't want to be here.
It's just where the job is.
Yeah, it's very industry. I think here's the thing. I think if you're in LA and you're like famous, it's probably like being in Charlie's Chocolate Factory, like the entire world. Actually, scratch that, because a lot of kids died. It's probably like being Willy Wonka in Charlie's Chocolate Factory. There we go. Because you get to do your own shit, have a bunch of fun, probably murder children and get away with it if you're famous in LA. So I guess the parallel holds.
Wow.
But yeah, I think the town's great if you're like super successful. It's like really easy to get on stage then. If you're not, it's like comedy is hard and it's like really industry heavy. So it's like you come here for the industry, but then it's like a lot of rejection as well. So it can like really weigh you down, and it like weighs a lot of people down. So it's like a lot of like really upset, broken people all just like rubbing against each other. And it's like, I want to fucking, it's like, I just want to, at a certain point, it's like, I just want to go and tell jokes. Like, I'm just, yeah. And I'm like, I've always been a complainer and I've always been bitter. And it's like, I've been to therapy. I fucking meditate. I don't know. I look at Instagram memes. I don't know what you want from me. Like, this is just who I am. So I feel like putting me in LA where it's just like, you have to be like so positive. Like, you have to be like Jim Carrey writing himself a $1 million check to be like sunny and like happy. And it's like, I just feel like, I mean, not that New York will treat you any better. I might just have a Stockholm syndrome. I am like,
This is great for
I'm all
podcast.
over
I hope you're all
the
right, but this is fucking great for the show. No, I mean, it seemed like I never lived in LA. I have never been to LA. I need to make that change, not to move there, but just to visit, to try to do some shows and stuff. So New York, I guess, because even though New York can be industry, at least with, I guess, at least more with acting and a little, it started to become. When did you get to New York? When you first moved to New York?
Must have been like 2010, I want
Because you kind of, so you were already doing stand up, but you got to New York around the same time that I started stand up, and I just remember doing all those shows with you, like that show. What was that show in the back room of, was Parkside Lounge?
to
It
say.
would be like the only, we would do, it was like Newark, New York. And we would do those shows, and like, I think we'd probably be the only comics on there, and we get to like do a lot of time and work and all that crap. And then you can kind of just focus on the work, I guess, and not really worry about, oh, who's getting this, who's booking this.
Yeah.
New York is a little less of that, I think.
It's like interesting because I was talking to another comic, and like, I'm not going to say who it is because I don't know if they want to publicly stand by this sentence, but like, New York, we were talking, and like, New York, you can feel busy, but not necessarily be moving forward, if that makes sense, depending on what you're trying to do. So it's like, which I mean, I agree and disagree with, just because things have changed so much. But it's like you could have like a full roster of like shows, but then if you're trying to like act or sell your own show or like raise your profile, you might not necessarily be taking steps towards that. Whereas like in LA, it's a little bit, there's more of that around you. Which is interesting, but like New York just feels, this maybe this is what it is. I feel like New York just feels a little bit more DIY. Like you feel like LA is full of gatekeepers. Just a lot of people that you need permission to work. And of course that's changing with like people shooting their own stuff and like social media, which is its own nightmare. But like New York just has more of a DIY spirit. Like a lot of the big comics like who stay in the city are podcasters. Like they've built their own following. They've done this themselves. They can like play shows themselves. So it's a lot more control. And then like I feel like psychologically, I'm at a point in LA where I'm just like, I'm so tired of like being told no or like getting really close to something and then like feeling like it's completely out of my hands, which is why like I love stand up so much, because it's like if you're funny, you can get on stage, you can tell jokes, and like you can work and like create something that people enjoy and that you enjoy, and it's like it's beautiful and it's like awesome. Whereas, like, I don't even know how many scripts I've written, and then it's like, for what? Like, where are these scripts going? Like, what am I doing? Like, yeah, okay, I'll pitch again, but it's like, how many times am I going to get close to something and then it's still no? And I know that's like the process, but it can be like psychologically, it's hard. It's really hard. Again, especially for me, because I'm like a whiny little, negative, like, me, everything sucks.
No,
And then, like,
you're just being you're just being real. I just got off the phone with my manager half an hour ago. I submitted three auditions like last week, and I don't I've got that didn't get anything. And it's just like it's like ah. And he's telling me, you're the casting directors love you. And I've been fortunate to get like the work that I've gotten, and I'm happy for that, but I still want to grow and build and do more things. And like I was joking with my friends. I was saying like, hey, at least the characters have names. The characters have names, and I'm in some substantial scenes and actually literally working on the craft. But it is very frustrating. It's really frustrating when it's like you put in the work and they're like, oh, they're going with their friends. The producers are going with it. Well, why did you?
Or somebody like super famous already, and it's like, why was I here? Like, in case they fell downstairs, like, why am I auditioning? Like, what is
Exactly.
this?
And it makes me it frustrates me, but then at the same time it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, all right. Well, at least the casting directors are on my side to a certain degree, and they only have so much control, but they're getting me in the room. But it's really hard 'cause yeah. I mean, but I was listening to your I watched your doc again, Modern Comedian. And it made me, I just rewatched it before we hit record. And I was like, God damn, I miss stand up. That makes me love stand up. Do you remember what you said? Something, I should have written it down, but you said something like, if you don't focus, you focus on the something about along the lines of focusing on the work and not worrying about where you'll end up, you'll get it's like, it's almost like something unlocks. And I was like, that's real shit. Like, and that
I
was like
mean, I
7 years ago.
guess. I feel like I look back on that and I'm like, what a dumb bitch. So full
But
of
that's
hope,
real. I mean, we're cynical, like comics, we can be cynical and stuff like that, but that's real shit though. But I watched it, 12 person that's like 12 years in, is like, oh fuck, I need to get back on stage. Like, I need to get, because it's nothing like having a good set. You feel good. And it's a really good build. So I would say everybody watch go on YouTube, watch Modern Comedian after this. But it was definitely like you're grinding, and it's, oh, do you know so and so? You should do Wyatt's show. And then you do it, and then there's like that's a victory.
It was like that was like a really interesting time.
Let's go back to that
Because
time,
it's
Suba.
I feel like I should be paying you a copay. It's interesting where I was psychologically, because like I don't know if you remember the mic scene around that time, but it was like, without like naming names or trying to be, I hate drama. Even if you figure out who the fuck I'm talking about, don't get in my mentions. I'm tired. I'm old. But like, there was like a group of like white dudes who were super nasty and like negative and would tell people to like go kill themselves and like just really tear down other comedians because they had nothing else inside. And like, I got a lot of that. Like, I bore a lot of the brunt of their bullshit and I internalized it. And I thought that the reason I wasn't getting things was because I didn't deserve them. So I was naturally a hard worker, but that also fed into this manic, like, oh my God, I have to get better. Where it's like, if I can just get good, this door is going to open for me. If I can just get good, this is going to happen for me. And that's not how this works. Hollywood is not a meritocracy. America in general is not a meritocracy. If you want something, you have to go out, build towards it, and demand it. And it was interesting, Scott Moran, the guy who filmed the documentary, who was a friend of mine, he said to me at one point, why are you still doing open mics? He's like, the booker of Conan a while back went to go see Rory Scovel. You were on the same show as him, and he was asking about you. He's like, why are you doing open mics? And then it just didn't even occur to me to be asking for something else, because I just thought that's where I was, that's what I deserved. And it wasn't until like somebody said that to me that like it was so sad that it just took someone telling me that I deserved more, who wasn't a position above me, to be like, maybe I do. Like I was just so so it's like, yeah, you have to work hard, but it's like also like you need to be going out and making like career moves and like making these decisions. Like I'll never forget telling a comic that they should be working harder, and then like them, they're like, I can't even say who they are, they're like super fucking famous now, and I'm like, every time they get something, I'm just like, oh God, I like feel embarrassed that I told them to like work harder. But it's kind of one of those things where like you don't, or at least I don't,
But hey, did you think that they weren't working hard at the time?
they were, but they were working, di they weren't working that hard. They were like still putting in the work. They just weren't working at the level that New York comics were working at, you know, like the ones who did like, which I don't even know if that's healthy or that you should be doing that. I think that's person to person. But they just weren't doing that level. And I thought that's what you needed to do to like achieve whatever. And for some people it is. I think working like that, and I'm still a stage rat. Like I love being on stage. I'm on stage as much as humanly possible because it's what I love. But some comics just work better doing less stage time and then sitting and digesting their set and walking around real life, and that's how they're inspired. And so it's like it's person to person, but me, for me, like that's how I work still. But yeah, it's interesting because I try to work hard because I want to be better, because I care about my jokes, because I care about what I'm saying and what I'm doing. And it's like realigning that, and it's like that's always been true, but I need to focus on that because hard work does not equate to results. It really doesn't. Sometimes it does. Like sometimes that shit comes back around and you're like, wow, this is awesome. But like a lot of the times it doesn't. And that's why I always had a problem when somebody gets something and they're like, oh, that person deserves it. I'm like, there is no fucking deserve. You know what I mean? Like, sure, they deserve it, but there are like 50 other people who deserve it. Probably some that deserve it more than the most deserving person you can think of. Like, this is such, it's so unfair who gets what, you know? And it's like, I'm not even trying to hate on people who are successful. I'm just trying to point out the fact that it can feel super random. It can feel really discouraging. And like, trying to focus on the why you're doing it, just because it's like, oh, I love doing this. This is what I do. This brings me joy. Knowing that, like, even if you're not like, say, you're never going to be on TV or have your own show, like, staff writers need to exist for these shows, these other people to be successful. So, like, understanding the value in those people, and like, would you ever look down on someone who helped like create your vision? Like, if you had a show, would you ever look down on somebody else who helped bring your dream to life? No, you would be so grateful that they're there and that they show up in the room every day to give you your dream. You'd be so grateful for them. And it's like, if you're grateful for that person, why can't you have that same gratitude for yourself? But it's hard. It's so hard, you know, because it's like you just want so much more. Or at least that, you know, I do, but you know.
I totally understand. It's a cool thing that we get to do, and sometimes you wanna when you wanna share more of yourself, you wanna be I think the arts allow you to be the best of yourself, the best version of yourself. And when there's so many gatekeepers in the way, it's hard to realize those dreams and to, put all that together. It's fucked up, but you kind of got to keep going. I mean, and you're still young, so it's like, I don't know. It's you said a lot, and it's hard to get. That must have been what, 2013, 2014 when you did that
Yeah,
Modern
I
Comedian.
think so. Yeah,
That was
I
around
think
the
around
time
then.
for me. I think that was around the time where I toured a little bit with Chris Hardwick. I would say that would probably be like one of my quote unquote better stand-up years, where it's like you grind, grind, grind. And I did all those same rooms, but a big black dude is not gonna get the bullshit that a small young Indian woman's gonna get, because they shouldn't be doing it to you, but then they know better fucking with me. and they won't do that. You know what I mean? Because they.
Yeah, I mean, but like, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, you obviously know better than me, but I still think even as like a big black dude, you don't, a lot of, comedians of color do not get the respect they deserve
Oh
for
no,
their, you're like,
respect-wise, respect is like, see, that's what I think I have a lot of more than success as far in stand-up. I think I'm a very good stand-up, but I think that I don't have the res like the I have the respect because a lot of the people that I talk to, the people that are in my circle, there's mutual respect, but I think it, on a larger scale, no. But I'm talking about the bullshit that you endure. That's what I'm talking about. The bullshit, like they're not gonna mess with me that way. But it was like a that scene was a cesspool. And I've said this so many times on the show where like that downtown scene, the first time I went up was New York Comedy Club. And then I went to Ochi's Lounge in at Comics. And that was a more of a that was more of a safe haven. It was like, people like I think like people like before like Mike Lawrence and Mark Normand and Dan St. Germain, Soder, like those guys were about to take off because they had put, that's just to name a few, but just to put, stuff into perspective. And that was kind of a safe haven. Sean Donnelly was hosting. And when that broke up, when Comics closed, it was like this weird, crazy diaspora to, I guess, mainly to Brooklyn, but that downtown scene, it was nothing there. And it just became all those shitty open mics. And it was just like a weird thing. And I guess it was a little better doing book shows, even though they were unpaid and stuff, but you were getting quality work and quality audiences. But yeah, like I would do Night Train a couple times a year, but all those shows, you're not gonna be opening, doing a show where Marc Maron's there all the time. Even though I did get to open for him once. Nice guy. But yeah, it's crazy the shit that we go through to do what we love. But do you think that made you stronger though? A stronger person slash comic going through that?
I think there's like a tendency, 'cause like I don't know how much of like like the way I was treated, but it was pretty wild, the shit that happened, especially
No.
like being, well, I'm not gonna touch on it too much, but like being in New York, like I started comedy when I was 17, and then I came to New York when I was 19 for a little bit, and then back again more permanently when I was 20.
Okay.
And so like doing comedy that young, like before the Me Too movement, like was not good. It was not okay. The way I treated was not okay. And I know like a billion female comics have stories. It's like it just
Sure.
wasn't okay. And so yeah, it was traumatic. And it's like, sure, I can look at where I am now and be like, yeah, I'm like stronger. I have more perspective, more empathy. I've grown a lot. I've calmed down a lot as a person. But it's kind of one of those things where like somebody will look at a woman and be like, oh, she's so strong. But it's like, I'd rather not be strong. I rather would just not, like
You
I
shouldn't have
would
been treated
rather
that
just,
way.
yeah, it's like, and then like I don't know, people make peace with it where they're like, yeah, and all of that was great, because even like this is a weird reference, but I was my boyfriend's rewatching Game of Thrones,
Okay.
and there's like these warriors called the Unsullied, where they like literally chop off their dicks when they're like kids and they're like enslaved and shit. And he was like, yeah, it was all worth it, because then I wouldn't have been with Daenerys and I wouldn't have met you. And I was like, nah, you should have kept your dick though. Like I know that's like a better place to be, like to be at peace and be like, oh, it's all part of the journey. But I was like, bro, this journey fucking sucks. It's like, I don't know. I don't have that level of peace with it. But it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure, yeah, I just rather would not have gone through that shit. Like, even if it did
Of
make me
course.
stronger, even if it did make me a better comic, like that sucked.
Yeah, no, it does suck.
It really
I mean,
sucked.
it's one thing to be battle tested, but at the same time, it's the battle, the being battle tested should just come from the reps and not the bullshit that you have to deal with all just to get on stage and just to be around that. It's just, and I think that's probably why a lot of dudes got scared. And I don't know what it's going to be like when we get back. Have you been getting up like through the pandemic, or what have you been doing?
Yeah, I mean, through most of it, I've been doing like Zoom shows, but then there's been like LA's had outdoor shows pop up and then shut down, depending on whatever the city's doing. So I've been doing some outdoor shows around LA, and I drove up to San Francisco because they have more outdoor shows than us for some reason. So I've been doing like weekends in San Francisco here and there. And then like San Diego has like indoor clubs, which I was waiting, you know, because I wanted people to have a chance to get vaccinated before I was you know, doing all that. But I'm going to be doing a weekend down at an indoor club late May.
Oh, that's great.
And like, yeah, so I've been trying to do like outdoor shows and like in-person comedy as much as possible, but I've been doing a lot of Zoom stuff.
Yeah, is it helping you? Has it helped? Do you get anything out of it? Or is it weird?
It's weird, and it's not necessarily, but it's not necessarily the best gauge, just because generally there'll be like six people maybe who have their mics on or who are more engaged than even like a large crowd. So such a small sample portion, if they were just there in the crowd, you would never be like, oh, this joke works or it doesn't work. But their opinions become like so prevalent or prominent because of, you know, like they're the only ones with their mics on. So it can be a bit of a crooked gauge, but it's better than nothing. And it kept me writing and creating and like in the habit. And some of the material I did on Zoom did end up like working really well once. And then some of it just did not. And I was like, wow, that killed for that one dude on his couch. You know, like, so I liked it because it kept me in the habit of writing jokes and performing. So it was useful in that way. But yeah, other than that, it's a mixed bag, but it's better than nothing, you know?
Yeah. I need to do something because I got a date in June and I'm trying to figure out where I want to go, where I want to get up at, just to get it out. Because I feel like maybe some of those would be like the Zoom shows would be a series of, you know how you have those sets and it's okay, you didn't bomb, but it's just like, well, I got up and I said those things that I wanted to say, and now I have to parse the figure out where the funny is in there, and you know,
yeah,
that's cool. So let's go back a little bit, Suba. Now you're suburban Chicago? What part?
Mundelein is initially where we are. Then we moved 10 minutes away, but Mundelein is the biggest suburb that people might know.
How far from the city was Mundelein?
I think it's an hour and a half.
Oh,
at least an hour and a half.
South or north?
Northwest of Chicago.
Okay, because maybe you told me that a long time ago, because I don't remember anybody ever mentioning that when I was living there. Mundelein. All right. What's it like? What's that like growing up there in that area?
I mean, very like very boring. Like, so I mean, they were it's like suburban, so it's like, you know, just like laser bowling and anywhere. Yeah. I mean, it was a little, I got bullied a lot, but like what comedian didn't? And then there was some racism, you know, in the neighborhood and shit. Like there was a neighbor that had a Confederate flag and would like spread trash on our front lawn until my dad caught him on video and was like, I'll ruin your kid's life if you don't cut it out. Also there were like dogs that kept getting off the leash when my dad would jog around the neighborhood, which like felt like too much of a coincidence. So there was like a lot of people were super chill, but yeah, there was definitely like racism like mixed in there. And then like, oh, you know,
were you so the only it was, child? Like, weird.
No, I had an older brother.
Okay.
He fared a lot better than me because he was a snitch. I didn't snitch, which was a mistake.
Like, oh, I snitched,
you know, but he would be like, oh, this person's bullying me. And then like my mom would come in and get it sorted. And then I didn't say anything because I was like trying to be cool. But then I ended up getting like super bullied, like huge mistake. Always snitch.
You know? What would they bully you for? Just because you were a brown girl?
Well, it was like a mix of things. Like, number one, I was really skittish. And like my mom would come home, like when she would come home angry, she would come home like yelling, and that's when I knew I'd be in trouble or whatever. So I would always be like, I think I developed an association with loud noises of being like trouble. So there was a point where like if somebody yelled my name, I would like flip, I would like jump or get startled. And then once kids found that out, that was like, you know, that was like crack for them. They were like, oh shit, like she's super easy to scare. And then of course I got made fun of for my name just being different. And then I was a little overweight, but it was the 90s, so like I thought I was a fat kid. And then I went back and looked at pictures and I was like, those fucking bitches, I wasn't even fat. Like I was so mad. But yeah, I got bullied for being chubby and like oh, I was also very hairy. Like I didn't know how to. My mom was not helping me get rid of any body hair, so that was an issue with kids in the locker room. Yeah, it was like a mix. And then, of course, I became super nerdy eventually.
Was it the traditional, like the Indian household where you had to be successful in academics, like pushing
Oh
you?
yeah, 100%. Like, yeah, no, there was like there. I just had to do well. There was a point where I wasn't doing well, but that's because it wasn't on my academic record. So my mom didn't crack the whip yet, and like I just didn't like school. But I think eighth grade, I want to say eighth grade is when your academic record starts. And it, like literally I had to learn a year of math on my own so I could place into advanced math. Like everything just started, you know, like changing where it's like, okay, but now you have to do well. Whereas before it was like, I was just like a weird kid that liked sports and art and I didn't want to like, you know, learn fucking math or care about it. But then like as soon as it would affect my colleges, like it was like an instant change. Like I just had to do it.
I had Sujata Day on last year. Do you know her?
Yeah. We've like I mean a little bit. We did a few shows together, but she seems great, yeah.
She's super cool. And I was asking her about what was it like growing up as an Indian girl in suburban Pennsylvania? And she's like, oh, it was fine. I was like, where's the darkness?
That's hilarious.
Obviously everybody has it, but she explores that in her film, Definition Please and stuff like that. But yeah, I think, I guess like the pressure for me was just, I was talking to my parent, my uncle passed away a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking to my parents about like, I don't know if you ever deal with this when somebody in the family dies, then more shit comes to the surface. It's not necessarily bad, but just stuff comes to surface. And I was saying, like I never realized how much pressure I was under because everybody, quote unquote, thought I was going to be okay because I had both of my parents around. And that's a pressure that you don't think about until, I didn't even think about that until like, but they're like, oh, I don't worry about Chris. I don't care. Chris will be fine. He'll be fine. He'll be fine. He'll be fine. And I didn't realize that until thankfully I got out of college and I was like, oh, you guys never worried about me? And I had my stress, not that they didn't care about me, but just, they always thought that I was going to be all right. So I guess they kind of left me alone, but I would still stress about grades, but that was a personal thing. And then I guess I knew my parents were working hard to keep me in private school and stuff. So,
Right.
yeah.
Yeah, my shit was pretty explicit. Like, I'm trying to remember exactly, like, because I know there was a point where, like, my dad would introduce my brother and be like, oh, this is a smart one. And then he would, like, point to me and be like, this one draws. Like, they just, like, they were constantly, like, yeah, fucking rude, right? And then they would, like, constantly pit us against each other. And then it's like, no matter what I did, nothing was good enough. So it's like, if I got 100 and there was an extra credit question, my mom would be like, why did you miss the extra credit question? Like, I
Jesus.
got 1 point away from perfect on the ACTs, and my mom wanted me to retake them. And I was like, no, like, that's a waste of my time. I'm not retaking them. It's so insane. Like, it was just constantly that. And then, yeah, it was also like the first time I had gotten like positive reinforcement in my life, because I was like super bullied. And then, like, my mom was like, okay, you have to start doing better. And then, getting good grades and knowing the answers was like the first time kids were nice to me. Like that was how I started to make friends, was like by being able to help people with their homework, you know, as like insane as it is. It's like, and then that kind of became my whole personality, you know? So it's like I had to be the kid that knew everything. Like I had to. And then it was like a lot of like Asian and like South Asian kids deal with that, where it's like if you're not perfect, if you're not the top, then what are you?
There was a
Yeah, and
kid
that was
in.
the
Oh, sorry.
Oh no. I was just gonna say I remembered one of the things that happened where it was like I told my mom I wanted to take less college classes in high school because I'm like, this is like, you know, a lot and I don't care. And then I told my mom that, and then she just yelled. She was like, "What are you gonna do? Stay home and make babies?" And I was like, "What the fuck, dude?" Like, it was a lot. Like, there was definitely a shit ton of pressure. I'm just like having trouble remembering the specific. Like, I remember knowing I had to be perfect, you know?
What did your parents do for a living?
My mom in India, she was a lawyer, but she didn't practice long enough. So when she came to America, she worked as a paralegal, and then my dad started off in construction, but then started like fixing up places and then like either selling them or renting them. So he eventually became a landlord.
Yeah, I guess, man, that I mean, yeah, pressuring kids is it's hard. It's that shit sucks. And then you gotta deal with the bullshit at school. And ugh. You think about that stuff and like everything was like, I guess it seemed like everything was make or break when you're that age. And then you're stressed about stuff. I mean, when I was, God, what, 13, I was worried about the play that I was in. I was worried about my grades, if a girl would like me. And yeah, it was very achieve. It's funny because we talk about achievement and stuff, and you being South Asian, it there was a kid, an Indian kid in my class. His parents didn't give a shit. He was kind of a
Dude,
fuck
yeah.
up. He was like a, I don't know if he was a stoner or what, but it's like I think he was in the airplanes, but it's like, dude, you're not good, dude. You're not like good in school. I don't know. I don't know what was going on with him, but it was just like we were looking at him like, dude, you're Indian. You step your game up, dog. Like
That's so funny.
I was like, what the
There
fuck?
was an Indian kid in my class who would say that shit to me. He's like, "Yeah, if I bring home, as long as I bring home like a B, B plus, they don't care." And it was like mind blowing to me. I was so mad because
Were
it's like I
you?
felt like I was under so much pressure.
Was it college prep? Was it just like public school or what?
It was public school, but like literally my parents, because they couldn't afford to buy a house in this neighborhood, they built it. They built a house in this neighborhood so we could go to the school.
Holy shit. So you had to, wow.
So it was like a really, I think it's one of, it was public school, but it was like a really
Really?
good public school. Like, and it was huge. They had like, I think there were like 4 or 5,000 students that go to that high
Jesus.
school.
How many
Yeah.
did you
So it was like,
graduate with?
I think like 1,100, something like that. Yeah.
Would you have graduation at like the local arena or something like
That
that?
I
Or
don't even remember. Where the hell did we graduate? I think it may have just been at the high school.
damn, because
No,
my,
it wasn't. It was somewhere special, but I can't remember.
I mean, I went to Catholic school, so we graduated at the National Cathedral. And I remember my cousin, who is a year old, couple years older than me, grew. He's from Virginia, and they had their graduation at the Coliseum. Like, and it was just like, whoa, so many kids. We only had like 150. You made me think about this. Like, there was a lot of pressure in high school to succeed. We were college prep, and looking back, we were kind of elitist because if there were kids that like it was more like there were kids that were just kind of like achievement based, and if we would have our grades, I talk about it all the time on the show, but like they put our GPA in a case in the main lobby, like every report, every term, and you see who got the honor roll, high honors, like your GPA would be up there.
Dude.
I made the high honors list like one or two. My sophomore year was my best year. But yeah, and it
That's
would just
crazy.
Like if you were at my school, it was show your name, all the schools you got into, and all the money, like beside
my God.
scholarship money you got.
That's too much. You
It's a
can't, I
lot.
wouldn't, no. That's
Yeah,
crazy.
it
My
was
school
intense.
actually, they were the opposite because, like, I think kids were killing themselves. So for my
Whoa.
year, yeah, it was that type of pressure. So, like, for my year, they took away valedictorian. Like, technically, I was valedictorian because I had the highest GPA, but, like, nobody knew.
That's
Like,
gotta suck.
I didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like where they had like the range where it's like the GPA is this to the mine was the
Yeah.
top one. So like kids figured out it was me before I even knew it was me. That's how like insane the school was. But then they brought it back. But it's because kids were like literally killing themselves if they couldn't hit valedictorian or couldn't do this or couldn't do that. And I
Wow.
was like so sick of that environment. That's why I refused to go Ivy League, which I vaguely regret. Just looking at how like Harvard
You
was
should
like a
have went, yeah.
direct. I know. I didn't realize. I didn't real.
Yeah.
I thought shit was a meritocracy. You know,
Yeah.
like I
Where
thought
did
if I
you
was just good, you know.
talk about some of the schools you got into and where and eventually just end with where you ended up going. I know Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah, I went to UPitt. I think I got into John Hopkins, and like I don't even remember where else I
Shit.
applied. But like University of Pittsburgh gave me the most money. So I
Okay.
think I may have even made money going to college. Like I had so many fucking scholarships. So
Wow.
I didn't want debt. I just didn't want debt.
Yeah.
Because like I didn't want to be doing anything I was doing, but it didn't occur to me that I could just go out and get a job, probably. I think I could at like 18 or whatever. I thought like, oh, if I need a degree, to like have some sort of stability while I'm working on comedy or while if this doesn't work out. But I mean, college was good because I was a Chancellor Scholar,
What's that mean?
UPITS. So it's like some unique program where they like have like, oh, okay, we're gonna pay for your whole ride, but then you're gonna meet at these Chancellor Scholar classes where we're gonna give you books and you're gonna discuss them. And it's like that's where I felt I actually learned how to like think and like was educated and like, learned
Yeah.
about different shit. That
Right.
was important to be a human being. But like, I started off as a bioengineer, but they were going to make me take 4 years to graduate. And I was like, fuck no, I'm not spending 4 years in Pittsburgh. So I switched to actuarial math, which like, I didn't give a shit about. I'm like, yeah, it's like I didn't really learn anything useful there that I was going to use going forward.
I
It did help me get a job in New York, which like, so I could move there right out of college, but I don't know.
So actuarial math was your degree?
Yeah, but it's
Wow.
like I wish I had just learned screenwriting or acting, which like, because it was such a pain in the ass to go back and learn it now, like as I'm doing stand-up comedy, just to be like,
Yeah.
oh shit, there's so much I have to learn now, and I
There's a
went and I did, you know.
lot of arts in Pennsylvania. One of my theater directors who was recently on the show a couple months ago studied at Pitt for his MFA, and I remember liking it. I was only there for like a couple days. I filmed an episode of a Netflix show there like maybe like 3 years ago, and it was cool. So did you just
Yeah, I have a lot of love for Pittsburgh. It's just that its comedy scene was like rough,
Oh,
you know?
really?
But
So you were
yeah,
doing
the
it. So you were doing stuff there, huh?
yeah, I started in high school, so and then I
Yeah.
kept it up through.
So
But it's like
did that give you any, that had to give you some kind of confidence back then, even at like 16, 17, or no? Like being able to do that?
no, I
Really?
think like. Yeah, I mean, I was so scared to be on stage for the longest time. I thought I was allergic to the microphone because my hands would go numb. And then later I learned that was a panic attack. I'm like, oh, I've been
Yeah.
having a panic attack on stage for years. And
Shit.
I just didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was rough. Pittsburgh's comedy scene was rough. Like I would drive up to Ohio sometimes to
Oh.
go do the Funny Bone or some shows around there. I would drive to Erie, Pennsylvania, which I think was 2, 3 hours away. And then like come back to campus, and so it's like I had a huge Adderall problem. I was not sleeping, so I was just like snorting Adderall like a fucking full on. I was so sleep deprived I hallucinated at one point, like, and that's when I was like, okay, we need to like go back home and like sit down, because I was reading Watchmen, which is like this graphic novel, and
Yeah.
I thought Rorschach was real for a second. Like, I went outside to go get milk and I was like, oh shit, I don't have my pepper spray. What if Rorschach comes? And I was like, girl, you out of your mind.
Wow.
And then I need to go home and take a nap. But yeah, it's like, it was rough. It was hard to get on stage. I mean, I was a young college girl, so a lot of musicians would let me do their mics for better or worse.
Hey, just do it. I did a lot of music open mics too, but you being a young girl would be a lot different than me growing up. But yeah,
I
that's
mean, like, Pittsburgh wasn't too bad. New York was like where I really got like, inundated. Pittsburgh, I almost felt like I had some close calls, but I didn't even realize what was going on around me or like who was protecting me. It was like, like those cartoons of a baby in a construction site and there's like all this shit. Like that was my experience in Pittsburgh.
Oh shit.
All this shit just happened around me and I had no idea.
Well,
Like I
maybe
remember
that's
being like wasted and then a guy being like, go home with whatever the fuck his name was. I forgot. He's like, I'm like, why? The buses. He's like, no, you're going home with him. Get on the bus with him. And then like being super drunk and being like, okay, I was gonna walk with this guy. And then turns out this guy had like assaulted another person's girlfriend and he was trying to get at me.
Oh shit.
So I didn't even like, yeah, it was like all this shit, but I just was like a baby in a construction site, just fucking dodging all of it. So it was like weird. I didn't even, which was like, I was pretty, Pittsburgh never, I never went through anything super traumatic in Pittsburgh. I was
Wow.
just like very dumb and very naive.
Did your parents know that you were doing stand up?
Sorry, say that again. My headphones cut out.
Did your parents know that you were doing stand up?
Yeah, they did. They didn't like it. They would they really didn't like it. My mom gave me her car. She let me borrow her car eventually because she found out I was getting rides from dudes at bars, and she's like, "You're gonna fucking die." She's like, "Take my car." So that was like supportive in a way. She could She
Damn.
was like, "You're gonna fucking die. You did what?" It's like it was like people I kind of knew at bars, who I would like see around, but I didn't know these people, and I was just getting into their cars, which wasn't smart. I get like it's a miracle I didn't die in Pittsburgh. Yeah.
That's wild, man. What so was it a constant struggle? Like, Mom, I'm an artist, or
She would like call, like, tell me. She was, I mean, I don't want to put too much of her stuff out there, but like, basically telling me she wished I wasn't hers or that I was like an embarrassment or like try to tell me, oh, you'd be perfect if you just didn't have this one thing, if you just weren't doing this one thing. Even my brother told me I was an embarrassment. Like he showed his
older or
friends,
younger?
older.
Okay.
Like he showed one of my videos to his friends, which nobody asked you to do that when I was like 17, 18, and told them they all made fun of him because of me. And I'm like, that's not my fault,
Yeah,
But it was like,
that's your
yeah, it was
shitty
bad.
friends.
I know. And like my mom would like call him. I mean, she would call me like crying, like begging me to be like, please just go back. This was even after college, like telling me to go back to grad school and stuff. Like they just hate it. They were doing everything they could to stop me.
And what did that do? Did that make it? That's another thing, like, that probably made you stronger, but you didn't need that shit.
It made me desperate to try and make it, It made me work really hard. That was definitely something. Yeah, especially when I was going through really traumatic shit. I just remember my mom telling me like something similar was gonna happen to me if I went and lived in New York by myself. And then like her telling me that, like me not wanting her to be right, like kept me going through really dark periods of my life. But like that's not good. Like that wasn't a good way to deal with that, but I don't know. It's like it was what it was. It definitely made me work really hard. And like eventually it came to a head where like I was like, I can't even talk to you. And then like they chilled out. But yeah, it was brutal. Like everything they could to stop me or step on my spirit. Like even when I started getting a few TV credits, my mom would be like, yeah, but that's a credit here and there. That's not long term. That's not a career. That's one thing, now what? So it was like they wouldn't even be happy when I started to get stuff. Now that my like once you start writing for TV, like generally speaking, you can pretty much make find a way to make money. So she's like chilled out because I've had stable income for a while and I haven't done anything wild on TV for her friends to complain about. So like she's been pretty chill now, but yeah, it was really rough for a really long time.
Because, hearing you talk at the beginning, most people would think that you haven't done anything, but you have a career. Like you're a writer. I mean, we all have things that we'd rather be doing more, we'd rather be doing a lot more than we're doing, but you have a career. Like you built a
And
career for yourself.
I have to be really careful when I'm speaking, because like, and I'm bad about this. I'm very bad about this. I'll admit it. I've done a lot of really cool shit that people would kill to do. I have. That's a fact. And I have to be grateful for it. Keep telling
Yeah.
myself that.
No, it's a, you can you have
But
to check yourself.
yeah.
I think it's human. That's a human thing. Like that's like I was telling you, like I can't. I was like mad about the fucking auditions I had that I put in all this work and then nothing. But at the same time, it's all about that balance. I mean, you have to let yourself have those moments where you're like, fuck this, and you the bitterness and the anger, but you just can't stay there. You just can't.
And
You can't live there.
it's in because like the thing is like even when I'm like, oh shit, man, like I didn't, I am where I am. It's because I'm thinking about all the stuff people don't see, like that I obviously wouldn't post to social media because it would be weird, and probably hurt me career-wise. But it's like, yeah, even like this past year, these past 2 years, and I know there was a pandemic going on,
Yeah,
but like
right.
the amount, and I was lucky to even be having opportunities in the first place, but like the amount of shit that would have changed my life that I was like in the top whatever, like, oh, it's between you and another person, or you're in the top five, and then didn't happen, was like wild. And like, so it's kind of one of those things where, I don't know, it's really painful when you get super close to something and then it's like, nope. And then it's like, for like 2 years to like have that happen is like, it makes it difficult to appreciate what I do have, just from like a base animal brain. But I do think it is my responsibility to like not be bitter because I'm lucky. I'm lucky. I'm making
Yeah.
money doing what, I mean, I don't always love every job. I'm making money in the ballpark of
Sure. No,
what
it's
I love.
you have to you do have to celebrate those wins, however you whenever you get them. It's like you because I see people who are nice people who seem come across as genuinely nice people. You follow them on Instagram and they post their call sheet or that they're doing work. It's like, God damn it, we get it, okay? But it's almost like you have to do that in a kind of a way, like to show people that you're, I don't know. I feel kind of weird about it, but sometimes you just gotta, hey, this is me. This I'm out here. I'm doing something. It's, yeah.
Yeah, I know I don't like self-promotion either, but like I think you, from what I understand, it's important to do,
Yeah.
So I don't like, I never really fault people for doing it. Every now and
No.
then, it's like, I can't look at this because I'm not happy. Like, it has nothing to do with you. I'm very miserable. But,
I'm just saying that it's a human thing as long as you don't live there, 'cause I feel like I have that too. Like I'm saying, like I'm not like, well, everything's roses. You sometimes you're just like, God, will you stop posting this shit? But no, it's one of those things. It's the biz. But you've done some cool stuff. Are you auditioning more? Like you were on Westworld. I did not see it because I haven't seen the show yet. But I saw that you booked it, and I liked the Instagram photo or
Oh,
something.
thanks.
Yeah, I was like, oh, good for Suba. Because you
It
shouldn't
was
be
fun.
like, you shouldn't be just hiding behind a writer's desk.
I
You
don't
can.
want to is the thing. It's like weird. I guess because like, I think as a comedian generally, you have one that's stronger than the other. Like either people are naturally more charismatic on stage, or they're good at acting, or they're stronger in writing. Generally, you have a strength, and my strength was writing, so that's what naturally it was writing. So that's what took off first. And
Sure.
then over the years, I've like done theater training, and I've done, learned Meisner, and done improv, and like character work, and like built it up like over time. So now, especially like you have to be really careful with management to make sure they have a vision that's the same as yours, because like it would be so easy to just make money off of me as a joke writer into perpetuity, but I would like hate myself, you know? It's like I want to act, I want to be on screen, I love it. Like I discovered I really love acting through all this stuff. So it's like, and it's like I like writing scripted shows. So like trying to move from variety and late night into that is also very difficult. So it's like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff I want to do still, but it's like it's difficult once you start. If you don't have management that shares the same vision as you, like it's very easy for people to pigeonhole you and just be like, oh yeah, great, you want to act? Well, here's a paycheck that I'm going to take 10% of right away. Or I could do a bunch of work for you and help get you acting. And I'm lucky enough to have a manager that supports me and like wants me to do other stuff, but yeah, a lot of the times that isn't the case, you know?
What are auditions like for you? What is it like being, I hate
Actually,
to,
it's gotten like dry since the pandemic. Like I've only
yeah.
had like a few things that I was like super excited about, which like I also signed with a new agency, so I don't know if it's them or what's going on. But they've been like, there was a point like pre-pandemic where the auditions were awesome. You know, like it was all types of different roles, like none of that stereotypic shit, like big juicy parts where it's like, you know, like the multiple three scenes where you get to like really show that you can do stuff. But like since the pandemic, it's been like kind of dry.
It's been a lot, like it's been ebbing and flowing a little bit here in New York. There's been some stuff I've come pretty close to. It's like, God damn it. Ah. And it's just, it would be like right in my wheelhouse and it would just, but yeah, it comes and goes. And I think things are opening up a little more. So like stand up is back in New York and,
I'm so excited. I'm
yeah,
gonna
I'm
be
ex
there in June.
Oh, cool. So I just need to get some reps in before I really, it's just like, I don't, it's like people, I was telling some friends a couple days ago that I'm vaccinated and I'm still wearing my mask and doing everything I need to do, but it's like I'm getting back to comedy. It's like, yeah, I don't know about getting into those crowds. I'm like, yeah, I just don't want to bomb. I'm just more worried about like not, I don't want to bomb, you know. So, well, what are you doing now? Can you say what you're working on now, the show that you're?
I think I can say
If not,
it.
well, oh, you're or just you're working and you're doing your thing.
Yeah, I'm writing for a new show. I won't give the specifics on it, but it's kind of like a what to watch show, like soup adjacent, but for a different streaming platform. But yeah.
Okay, that's cool. When did you do your Lily Singh set?
I think that aired sometime in the summer last year, but I filmed it way in advance. So I
Oh,
think I
okay.
filmed it like December 2019, and then it came out like April or May,
Oh,
2020.
okay. Yeah, that was a good set.
Oh,
You
thank you.
all you was that your t television debut or did you do G Gotham?
Oh, I did do Gotham. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Okay. Your stuff is funny because I was looking at that Scott Moran piece and those jokes in there are kind of evergreen. Especially like now, like
Yeah.
the beer and the freedom joke and the ketchup joke. Like that's
Oh,
still like
yeah.
it's still do you ever bring stuff back? Is that too old for you or is it just
That,
like
those jokes, I honestly forgot I had them until you brought them up. I'm trying, I think I told you, I'm trying to, one, pitch a special, and two, record an album, bare minimum, record an album. Once I can get these touring dates in line, it's been an absolute nightmare, but I'm trying. So for that reason, I've had to stop. I was like, stop writing new jokes, and now I'm just like rewriting and going through all of my old material. And yeah, that's been a like, holy shit, dude, I forgot I had all these jokes. And then it's like, I always was like, okay, this works, but then like, what is actually would I put in an hour out of
Mm-hmm.
everything I've done over like 14 years? And it's like, man, I should have recorded something sooner because there's a lot of shit to sort through, you
Yeah,
know?
your books in that doc, that's like would scare Eminem's character in 8 Mile. Like it's definitely like those composition books. And I looked at that shit an hour ago and I was like, God damn, I'm not working enough. I was not working. Like I thought I was, you know, it's but everybody's process, but just to look at your stuff, like for it to be tactile and like literally there. Like my shit is like Drake, where he writes it in his phone, and it's just like, oh, I'm gonna say this bullet point thing, but it's like, no, your shit was like intricate.
Now I use Pages. Now I don't, I mean, I still have like physical notebooks, but I use like documents now.
Pages in MacBook or whatever. Okay,
Yeah.
okay. I just got a MacBook, and for the first time since childhood, like when I was a kid, I had an Apple, but like. This shit does fit, make you more productive. Like you,
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it does. It's like I got to do something if I put down all this money.
Oh
I got to learn how
yeah.
to fucking edit
Yeah.
a video and do something to really make sure that this purchase is legitimate. Well, Suba, what's next for you? You got some dates coming up, or you
I
are.
mean, my manager, we've been meeting. I've been trying to jump on the phone with him. We've been playing tag. But I think he has some stuff confirmed. Everything I try to book on my own was just like all these venues are like in flux and shit, or they're booked out 6 months. Just because all these like, you know, super successful headliners are like, get me on the road. And I'm like, no,
You see
it's not for me.
the Instagram where it's like, I'm in Tennessee, Delaware, Ohio, there.
Yeah, so I might have to just like push back my tour dates. Like I was trying really hard to make it August, but I'm thinking it might even be the winter months that I'm hitting the road. But by in a little bit, I will be touring. I feel it. I've apparently had some confirmations or just working out dates, so I'll definitely be touring. Looking forward to that for sure. Hopefully trying to pitch some more shows once that all comes together. Auditioning when they come through, but yeah, that's about
That's
it.
good, Suba. This has been fantastic. This was like 8 or 9 years in the making.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we finally got to do this. This was so much fun.
Yeah, no, this was great. It was good seeing you again.
Well, look, everybody, thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.